Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
Is Northwestern Medicine BP? Call Dr. Morse right now.
Doctor. Kevin Morse, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing fine. How are you?
Not bad for a Monday morning.
I don't know if I mentioned this, but the news that you just heard was sponsored by Comcast Business. And, of course, you are brought to us by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. How are things at Mary and Joy? Just one of the many things you do so well for Northwestern.
Yeah, Mary Joy is doing great. You know, it's an amazing place, as you know. You know, you take somebody who has a devastating injury, whether it's a brain injury, whether it's traumatic brain injury, whether it's a stroke, whether it's a musculoskeletal issue. It's a devastating injury, and it changes their lives. And after being taken care of in the acute care hospital, the Mary and Joy folks teach people how to walk again, teach people how to eat again, teach people how to do things. And it's an amazing place. I love it. They're great people, and people don't understand what rehab medicine actually is and the impact it makes on people's lives.
You know, you always talk about the commitment of nurses and the impossibly great work that they do all the time, when, you know, anybody that's paying any attention agrees. But you walk through Mary and Joy, and I'm sure other rehab places that, you know, can tell similar stories, but in my experience, you walk through Mary and Joy, and you see the smiles on these therapists' faces as they're doing some of the literal heavy lifting and some of the hardest work you could do in medicine. It's very impressive, because they all seem to love their jobs, whether they do or not.
Yeah, you know, they do, and they have to keep that positive attitude, because there's a lot of frustration. You know, those small little things that someone for the first time was able to get up out of a chair. You know, we celebrate those successes, but you have to continue to smile and tell those people you're doing it, you're improving. When patients don't see it, they want to be able to run again really fast, and they want to be able to do things. And with the right attitude, which is a big part of it, you have educated people with the right attitude and smile and support, and you're going to have a successful program.
Well, fine work by you and all of yours. Let's jump into, and happy Valentine's Day. Will you be my Valentine, Doc?
Well, are you going to send me, like, flowers or anything?
Yeah, sure. I'll pick something up for you.
Okay.
You know, we've always had that kind of relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Donuts.
Send you a donut from Stan's. Of course, Valentine's Day makes you think of hearts. February is heart. Is it Heart Awareness Month? Heart Disease Awareness Month? What is February?
Yeah, it is. It's Heart Awareness Month. So, you know, like you said, February, you think of red, you think of hearts. So we kind of jump on that bandwagon and try to say, okay, it's Valentine's Day, and the symbol of Valentine's Day is a heart. Well, let's talk about how we can protect it, what we can do, what we're doing poorly, what we're doing good.
And women have a heart disease risk that isn't talked about nearly as much, mostly because women don't take as good care of themselves as they should while they're taking care of the rest of the world. So what do we do about that?
Yeah, and it's true. You know, we talk about breast cancer, we talk about ovarian cancer, we talk about a lot of other medical conditions in women. But, you know, 25%, one in four women are going to die from heart disease. We talk about the man who has the classic symptoms for heart disease, but we really need to make sure that women understand that, hey, you know what? Heart disease is not a sex-based disease. You know, women have it almost as equally as men, and it's still the number one killer in Americans.
So when it comes to the female side of this coin, let's start there. What do we do?
Well, probably one of the biggest things is to make sure that women understand what the signs are and the symptoms are that they're looking for, and also know their family history. You know, last week Susan Lucci shared, you know, that she had a heart attack. Rosie O'Donnell has shared in the past that she had a heart attack. But you can name hundreds of men who do that. So we have to really talk to women and say, okay, you know, that back pain, that chest discomfort, that shortness of breath, those things that you might just blow off, are signs and symptoms that you might have heart disease. And like you said, women are always taking care of us or taking care of others and their families. You know, they need to make sure that they understand what some of these subtle signs are and get in and get those checked.
So a couple things here. First off, the symptoms of a heart attack in women are different than men, yes?
Well, they're often somewhat the same, but not to the point. So they're a little bit more subtle. Men are often, you're going to see crushing chest pain, and they're sweating and they're nauseated. Women may have a little indigestion. They may have this subtle chest discomfort. So they don't have the full-blown symptoms that men often have. So the symptoms are a little bit more subtle. They can also have more back pain and more indigestion, where men really have it, you know, they just kind of put their hand on the top of their chest and say, this is where the discomfort is. Women may often have it in their back. So it's the brain is trying to tell us where this discomfort is coming from, and women may be wired a little differently for some of the symptoms.
Sorry, Mayor. No, that's okay.
I was just reading that Susan Lucci article as well, and she was in such great health. She did Pilates every day. She's 73. She's unbelievably in great shape, and she was just having that rib cage pain, she said, for like weeks, and yep. She didn't do anything about it until it radiated to her arm. Then she finally did something about it.
And Mary, you make another good point, you know, how, you know, she's in good shape and she does Pilates. We have to understand that does not equate. Mary, you know my brother. You just saw him recently at a store, right?
Yeah.
My brother had a heart attack at the age of 47. Hmm. Now, he makes me look fat. He works out.
Wait, which brother? How do I not know this story? Which brother?
Kurt.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's in unbelievably great shape. You look at him, and he's skinny, and he's in good shape, and but we were dealt a bad genetic hand at times, and we just have to make sure that you know what your family history is, because some of the things that you can control when you know your family history will extend your life.
But you can have heart disease without having a heart attack.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, matter of fact, if you take the definition of heart disease, one half of the country has heart disease, whether it's high blood pressure, whether it's elevated cholesterol, whether it's angina. I mean, one half of the United States has heart disease.
Doc, we've been told and continue to tell about exercise and getting rid of fatty foods, but also smoking, things of that nature. When it comes to the medical side of this, when you think about statin drugs and lowering cholesterol and blood pressure, had there been technological advances on how to treat heart disease and heart attacks?
Yeah, absolutely, Justin. It's kind of interesting how the way you said it, right? We all have these problems, but now what can we do to take care of them? So, you know, we've had a big industry for this. So there's been huge advancements. People used to think that statin drugs are so expensive. You had to take them so often. You had bad side effects. So, no, that is definitely the statin drugs, which many people should be on and aren't. High blood pressure medication now that you just have to take once a day instead of four times a day. So from the pharma side, there's been big advancements. And then on the structural side as well, what can we do to replace a faulty heart valve without opening someone's chest and doing open heart surgery? How can we stop somebody from having an irregular heart rate besides putting them on medication for the rest of their life? We go in and we do something called ablations, where we fry the bad electrical portion of the heart so that their heart goes back into a normal rhythm. Before, that person was on medications for the rest of their lives. We've done things on CAT scans and how fast we can do a CAT scan to show people that they have calcium deposits in the arteries that lead to their heart. So medicine is definitely advanced. We have just fallen short on the prevention side.
Mark Carman is engaged, so he's all about hearts and love and things of that nature.
I'm having a heart attack listening to this conversation.
All right, so we're going to do a big-time broadcaster tease here.
Yeah.
What is your question? And then Doc will come back and answer it on the other side.
I'm just curious about preventive things you should do on your regular physical. People get echocardiograms. I don't think a lot of people get chest x-rays. What should you do know where you're at?
It's a good thought. We'll come back and see if Mark's heart attack has happened. Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Mark Carman, what was your question again about hearts and heart disease?
Looking for some preventative tips, not just eating well and exercising, but when you go to the doctor, maybe your annual physical, what should you be doing? Should you get a chest x-ray, echocardiograms? What do you think, Doc?
Yeah, you know, Mark, it's interesting. You know, people will often say, why didn't you do a chest x-ray when I had my physical? You know, can't you check my heart by doing that? And really, the chest x-ray is only going to show us a couple things. One, it's going to show us more about your lungs and whether you have pneumonia. It's going to show us a little bit about your bone structure and whether you have any rib fractures. But it really doesn't do a whole heck of a lot to evaluate the heart. So chest x-rays really probably aren't going to be used there. Echocardiogram, absolutely. If your doctor listens to your heart and you've had the same doctor, he says, wow, I hear a murmur now that I didn't hear before. Murmurs are caused as blood flow goes through valves, and sometimes it comes back across the valve and it makes a sound. So it's an early sign for a heart valve issue. So An echocardiogram is great. A stress test, depending on your age and your family history, absolutely. But, I mean, you're going to get married, so really you're going to see the cost of the wedding. Right. And when you see that, that'll be your stress test right there. If you get chest pain when you're reading that, that's going to be a sign for you.
Right, right.
And then really probably the biggest thing that people need to do when they go to see their doctor, and they're going to check some numbers. One, they should know what their blood pressure is when they leave. And doctors really, for at the time of physical, you should know what your blood sugar is, and more importantly, something called your hemoglobin A1C, which shows us your blood count, or excuse me, your glucose level over 120 days. And then everybody wants to know what their cholesterol level is, which is important, but probably more important that you know what your LDL cholesterol is and your HDL. And your LDL we want below 100, and that's more diet focused. And your HDL we want above 60, which is more exercise focused. So those would be the numbers, along with your family history, to make sure you discuss that with your doc.
I mean, because I take a statin, and because of you know, getting exercise and you know, avoiding eggs. No, avoiding you know, trying to eat better and stuff. I have
You're trying to eat better. You're not avoiding trying to eat better.
I'm avoiding trying to eat better. Yeah. That's the old me. I had a cholesterol test recently. It's the lowest cholesterol I've had since I think I was born.
Oh, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
as you know, I'm trying to get back to my baby weight anyway.
Yeah, that's
trying to get back to what I weighed at 6 months.
Yeah, you look around the studio right there, there's probably three of you that, if you knew what your numbers were, probably would qualify for statin drugs. That's how prevalent hyperlipidemia is in this country.
All right, so the cholesterol-lowering meds, we've seen a bunch of studies that say they're good for you, they're not good for you. I mean, it's the type of stuff we see all the time. Any concerns of the statins that are new that have developed in the last 6 months?
No, you know, and I think what's going to happen is you're going to see doctors start to be more and more aggressive because we know the importance of lowering this. So instead of seeing a decrease in the use of statins, I think you're going to see an increase in the use of statins, and you'll see it coupled with other medications. Statins work in one way. We have other drugs that block fat from being absorbed. So we're going to try to do everything we possibly can to take our bad dietary habits that we have to make sure that they don't affect our blood vessels.
Sandberg.
Doc, if you don't have genetic predisposition and you're active and you have a relatively healthy diet, do you have reason to have it checked out also?
You know, I think any good individual physician, when they're seeing somebody, they're seeing a patient over the age of 40, probably needs to have that discussion. Because even though we think we're doing good things, we really don't. We have way too much sodium. We didn't even touch on sodium, but yet we're thinking about cholesterol all the time. So, you know, even the healthiest person, like I said, my brother can ride a bike 120 miles and doesn't look like anything. But again, he has some genetic predisposition. But it's got to be in the back of the mind of all physicians, because it's still the number one heart killer in this country.
All right, so we've gone through most of the initial things we need to talk about here. You need to refer to the notes, as we always tell you to do. Doc provides great notes. We'll post those with the podcast. But aside from chest pain, indigestion or heartburn, shortness of breath, back and jaw pain, back pain, if you have a pain in the middle of your shoulder blades in the back, that's just as serious as if you feel it in your chest, right?
Absolutely. Yep. And jaw pain as well. And shortness of breath that comes out of the blue. It's like, wait a second. It's not like I just ran up a flight of stairs. Why do I feel like I can't catch my breath today?
All right. So the last question I have for you before we go any farther is I've heard about silent heart attacks for years. Is it true the body gives you a warning sign before you have one, or is that on a case-by-case basis?
It's almost on a case-by-case basis, and usually when we say silent heart attack, the patient may have had symptoms, they just didn't recognize that they did. The body is going to try to tell you what's going on. Some people have a higher pain tolerance. Some people might have that sensation of pressure a lot, so they don't really realize when they had it that one time. But someone can look at an EKG and say, wow, you had a heart attack. No, I didn't. Yes, I can show you electronically on this piece of paper that you had a heart attack in the past. I never remember that. I didn't have the symptoms. And it's like, well, how can you survive? Heart attacks have a big spectrum, all the way from almost sudden death to, you know, just portions of the heart are damaged. So anywhere in that spectrum, if you had the disease and you had the illness and you had an episode, I'll say, but you may not have recognized the symptoms, we'll label those as silent heart attacks.
It's Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. And February is Heart Awareness Month. Be aware of your family history. Be aware of your own health history. Treat yourself better. And particular females who are listening, take care of yourself, because we need you to be around to take care of us. because we're bad at it. But you got to take care of yourself first. You know, it's like putting the oxygen mask on you before you put it on your kids on a plane, right, Doug? Right.
Yep. Well said. Yep.
All right. And by the way, it's not just February with the heart and the awareness and that, because in April, it's Irritable Bowel Syndrome Awareness Month. So I've got a whole line of greeting cards with colons on them that I'm going to be putting out, Doc. I hope I can get your endorsement.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll sign them.
Okay. See you, buddy.
Take care, guys.